Welcome to the Declaration of Divorce podcast. This is episode 56. Thanks for tuning in. We are your hosts, Alexei of Card, Ninja Turtle.
Hey, guys.
And Ali Aras.
Hey, folks.
First things first, lots of shout-outs to be had. We've made a lot of friends over the past 2 weeks. I want to give a shout-out to my newly reconciled Brosef, DNS Black, and the rest of Dirtnap Squad. You guys were amazing down in Pravi. A shout-out to the Pravi Goons, in particular, Faulty7, it's cool FC. Shout-out to Brave Newbies Inc., Reverb, and Primal.
That's adorable. You and DNS made up?
Yeah.
Nice.
We buried the vagabond, as it were.
Nice. Almost sounds kind of sexual, but anyways. I want to give a shout-out from Milwaukee's Upper East Side. I just moved up here. I know quite a few real-life bros that also play EVE, and we're going to do it big up here. Hopefully some meetups to come, get something regular going for the community up here, because I know there are some guys. Also, a big shout-out to Jeff Rader and his relaunch of Shit on Kugu. Shitonkugu.com, I think it is. But he's going for a new kind of feel to exactly the same thing he was doing before. It's nice.
Are they going to touch the Raxus?
And
moving on.
And I'll give a shout out to also everyone in Free Pravi 2013. It's a long cast list of bros. Bombers Bar, Brave Newbies, Dirtnap Squad, Diceco, which is the Reverb and Primal, the folks from Nest and the CFC who came down, especially as Alex just said, Faulty7, great CFCFC. Freeze for being the first one to stick his head in, whelping an EMP gang to my poorly scouted CVA fleet. And all the sound guys who stepped the hell up. We had a ton of people who previously were just sort of running around doing their own thing and have now, you know, taken on a lot of leadership roles and organization. And finally, shout out to Noir for reasons that will become clear later.
I want to give an additional shout-out real quick to Jun Ting, who did some amazing scouting during the Pravi War. Like, felt like she was everywhere. It's a great
She's
job.
She's awesome.
Alright, our sponsor, EVE Timecode. Buy 14 EVE Timecodes, get one free, evetimecode.com, where your business counts. Let's get right into the poll discussion. It is quite topical, given some of the news that we're going to be discussing on this podcast. Will the CFC push into Delve? We had a record number of votes on this particular question. Very cool. And it was really divided. An even number, 36% each, said yes and no. And then 28% said someone else will try to take Delve from Test. I say this is topical because Test has officially withdrawn to Iridia. So, the door is open.
And it looks like both CFC and someone else are moving in. We had a couple of people announce that they are moving down to Delve, and CFC has turned their eyes to it. So, looks like all of the above.
Yeah, I guess the big news is sort of related to this, and we'll sort of conflate these two points in our news segment because they're somewhat related. Dinner Coalition is disbanding. And one of, I guess, the, I would say, major alliance in Dinnerco initiative is effectively abandoning their space and moving into NPC Delve. Which, to me, says, you know, it's not going on Safari. They are probably going to try to make a play for Delve itself. Because otherwise, why would they leave all their equipment and catch and, you know, pull up their towers and all that kind of stuff. NPC Delve is nice, but it's not that nice. I mean, they're giving up an entire region for... Go ahead.
I was just going to say, on the other hand, you know, especially like Northern Ketch is the shittiest thing since Providence. It's pretty dead. It's pretty hard to get to. No one cares about it. So if they could move up to Delve, that would have them going up in the world.
I don't disagree there. Now, they haven't actually announced plans that they're going to take Delve. I just think that's the only logical conclusion you can draw from what they're doing.
Well, the poll question was really basically just like, do you think Tusk will be able to keep Delve? And what, regardless of whether you think the CFC will push into it or somebody else is going to push into it, like, that was the underlying question there, I think.
Yeah, and about two-thirds of people think no, they're not going to be able to. And since they've moved to Iridia, I don't even think they want to. I think they sort of realized that they need a break. They need to take time and clean house. They've already kicked a bunch of corps. Some important individuals that joined them in their war effort have left. They've pretty much lost all hope of meaningful income. So, you know, ship replacement programs, all those sorts of things are really going to be strained. And they're moving into a part of Iridia they're now calling the Testagon because of how it looks on Dotland. There's, like, in the announcement post, they sort of evoked the Testagram, which is where they sort of grew up out in Declan. But if they think that, like, Losec Iridia is anything like Declan, we're in for a rude awakening.
They've also lost a lot of people over the past brief period of time, so all of their guys who were doing anything have pretty much all jumped off ships and have gone to PL, some have gone other places. So it's going to be a very interesting time for them in terms of reestablishing their core of actual talented people who do anything.
This is our first story in Eve News, by the way.
Yes,
we kind of segmented in from the poll, but it was designed like that, kids.
Are you implying that our polls are not the most topical and scientifically relevant parts of the podcast?
No, I implied that like 6 months ago. Today, I'm implying that the streamlining of how we, lay the shows out, it wasn't an accident that these were put next to each other. And yeah, the polls are full of shit.
Look, don't doubt our scientific method, Turtle. Believe.
People clicked on buttons on the internet. I don't see what could possibly be more scientific than that.
Exactly. Our listeners know what they're talking about, unless they disagree with us, in which case they're idiots. But yeah, this, the low sex systems they're moving into.
They're shit. I don't know.
Well,
I never.
Great.
I never really expected them to hang on to Delve, I guess, but I never expected them to just, like, walk out of there. I guess I really kind of underestimated how much they lost. And if they were, like, at the precipice of trying to meet CFC power, and, you know, they just fell short that one time at 6VDT, it's like, they're not going to go any higher. They're just slumping, and I guess I underestimated that to the point where I think they're actually going to drop Sob and Delve. I don't honestly think they're going to try and hold it. How are they paying for it? If they're evacing out to Iridia, that's like kind of garbagey Losec, to be honest. No offense, guys, but...
Is there any non-garbagey Losec, though?
Yeah.
I'd say
wherever Test isn't this, hanging out.
The only defense of this particular pocket is that there do seem to be a large concentration of R64s there for them. But, I mean, if they were a small alliance, like 200-300 people, then yeah, this would be a great place for them to incubate. But even after they cut people, there's still going to be an alliance of several thousand players. And there's just not enough resources here for them to hope to get anywhere close to what they need to support that.
Yeah.
If I were them, I'd turn Sov off immediately, conserve as much as possible, and start looking at, like, I don't know, a massive reaction farm down there or something, because they're not going to be able to mine moons. They're not going to be able to rat meaningfully. So they're going to have to figure shit out.
Well, yeah, and it's like, you're going into this rebuilding period, which is apparently what it is. They restructured a lot of leadership and how their military works and stuff now. Good timing. But they're not going to be able to support all those guys out there in low sec, so, you know, some guys are going to go to high sec, or some are going to spin off and do other things. I know a lot of people that, like, just didn't that was it. Like, 6 feet ET, like, that was it. And they just kind of were done with tests after that, because tests had not really been what they wanted, I guess. And so, you know, are they down that notch now, where they're not, like, a power in EVE anymore? You know what I mean?
Like, well, they still have a lot of players, so I don't want to discount them too much. Like, they could still put up a fleet of, like, 1,000 people, which is way more than anyone else in that area is going to be able to do. Maybe they're going to look at expanding throughout the entirety of Los Securitia. Maybe that's the strategy. Someplace they can't get kicked out of. I don't know. They have to think of something. They sure as hell can't keep that status quo down there. I would say for no more than a month or two. Or they're going to leak members or just leak money to the point where they no longer are relevant. Speaking of relevance, in search of relevance, several alliances have left the Diviner Coalition, which, for our listeners who have forgotten, is basically the leftovers of the HBC minus Test and Tribal Band. So you've got your Initiative and NPL, yeah. So you've got your Initiatives, you've got your Wall Trapers Alliance, you've got your, what is it, Insidious Empire, I think is the other one.
Yep.
You've got your, you used to have your Unclaimed before they left. Flying Dangerous is there, Here Be Dragons is there, those types of groups. That's completely done with now. They're scattered to the winds. Initiative, as we said, is moving to Delve. You've got Insidious Empire trading their space and impasse over to move to the drone regions and invade Razor Alliance, supposedly with the help of Pandemic Legion, up in Cobalt Edge. Just like as far northeast as you can possibly get. And it looks like the people that are filling the vacuum are going to be the Stained Russians, Darkness of Despair, AAA, those types. And perhaps a few alliances will hang on. I assume not every alliance will move. I know Wall Trapers is going to move with Initiative. Perhaps one or two more will move with Insidious Empire as well. As for the rest, I think it's probably a little too early to say.
I'm sure some number of them will just go blow up with the Stained Russians. Kiss, make up, have a drink, and then be pets of the Stained Russians.
I think sort of the odd person out in this layout is Tribal Band. What are they going to do? You haven't heard much about them, but if Test is abandoned to Losec, and Diviner Coalition is gone, and the Stained Russians are filling that void, they're looking in a pretty precarious position down there in Period Basis, and they've got part of Paragon Soul. I mean, I figure the Stained Russians will go for the Paragon Soul holdings at least, if not push them all the way out.
Yeah, I think they're going to have to go figure out who they want to be friends with at this point, and make some new friends or prepare to go move somewhere else. Because Fortress Period Basis isn't going to be a thing that's going to work.
No. I mean, they couldn't. I mean, they're an active alliance, but I don't see them matching Initiative's numbers. I don't see them matching the Stained Russian numbers. I don't see them matching CFC numbers. So they've got to join with somebody, or it's really just a matter of time.
Yeah, they're in kind of a shitty little corner there, aren't they? Like, there's no easy way out of that one.
Yep.
That's a good region, but, like, it's a good region. People are going
to
want
it. No, it's a great region. It's precarious, though, because it's so deep and cut off. And you got
right
now empty space to your north and hostile space to your east.
And or potentially, anyways. It's empty space that's about to fill up with people who may or may not be hostile to you.
Yep. In non-00 news, although I guess it's sort of related, the winner for Alliance Tournament 11 has been crowned in what like, I was thrilled, literally on the edge of my seat. Most Alliance tournament matches, to be honest, are sort of boring after the first couple of minutes. But I could not be more engaged on the finals of Hydra versus Pandemic Legion. Pandemic Legion taking the win on the fifth game and, like, really taking it down to the wire to become the Alliance Tournament 11 champions. And now they have these even more tournament ships, Covert Ops, Cruiser, and Frigate, that are, like, actually good solo boats.
Yeah, they're a lot better for solo boats than in an area where you can't even use a Covops cloak, so that'll be exciting.
Yeah, that final was actually probably one of the best series I've ever seen in the Alliance tournament. When they brought that shield setup out, PL brought that shield setup on the fourth round, and it was like, they're talking about the meta in between, you know, what are they going to bring out? Oh, they're going to go back to their roots. And I said out loud to myself, I was like, they're going to bring that shield setup, exactly the same thing, right a second time. Because it's like, it's so stupid, it can't not work, you know? Like, everybody's metaing the shit out of this thing, and PL's just, like, going to hit the brakes and let the cops fly by you, you know? And then just, you know, cruise. And that's exactly what they did. They brought that shield setup again for the fifth round, and, oh my god, it was one of the best series I've seen.
And what seemed to dominate the finals was the Sentry Drone meta. Both teams were trying to basically field as many Sentry Drones as they possibly could in various combinations, even in sometimes, you know, not using logistic ships, just so they could get more Sentry Drones on the field. I thought it was really interesting, and the first time I saw the no logistic Sentry Drone team, I was like, oh, that's not gonna work. But sure enough, it cleaned up. Why do you think Sentry Drones were, like, so meta-dominant this one when they really weren't before? I mean, we're not even talking drones on the Dominixes. These were just drones on, like, Myrmidons, drones on Gilas, drones on Ishtars.
Well, but we've seen those ships buffed, haven't we? Like, it's not so much that the drones are any better, because they're pretty much the same. It's the ships that are using them have gotten better.
Well, the Vexer got buffed, the Myrmidon got buffed, but the Ishtar and the Gila haven't been touched.
But you now have drone damage amplifiers, all that stuff, and Sentry Drones are just becoming a bigger thing in general. Even if the Ishtar and the Gila didn't get buffed, they can now play second fiddle to your Dominix, your Myrmidon, your Vexer.
They've been good. Like, they haven't had to be buffed. Like, they've been good. For years, they've been good.
I agree there. But, you know, other teams have tried Sentry Drone setups in the tournament's previous years. It just doesn't feel like they were as successful as they were this round. It could be that, you know, the game's finally caught up to the new modules that have been added. Like Ellie's saying, having the drone damage amplifiers and figuring out, you know, how to employ the best number of them and how to spread your team out such that the drones are at maximum effectiveness.
Yeah, and what with everyone using Sentry Drones as a way to basically completely get around certain kinds of control teams, we've got a pretty heavy damp meta going on right now, but if you don't spread your damps out, then at least one person will be able to lock and project your damage just as well as you could otherwise.
That's an excellent point. Why do you think we're not seeing... I mean, we're seeing it somewhat, mostly with the Dominix. But outside of the Dominix fleets, we're not really seeing much Sentry Drone use on the actual server. But then it's dominating the Alliance tournament. I think it's...
Well,
from what we've seen in Providence...
I would disagree with that, too. Test Prophecies?
Yeah, there's...
Yeah. But they have gotten their ass kicked literally every fielded a prophecy fleet, as far as I know.
Against a CFC.
And in Providence.
They have not gotten their... when they were fielding the prophecy fleets in Providence, they were cleaning up with them.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they were doing quite well. Providence created our Sentry Comp, I think, literally in reaction to that. And the Providence Sentry Comp had been doing reasonably well. In the EU time zone engagements we had, the Sentry Comp was doing mostly fine, as long as, you know, no one was getting off bombing runs or whatever. It's essentially a miniature slow cat.
And you have the CFC now talking about putting them in their Megathrons, too. So, like, I think everybody's caught on to that one on Drank.
Yeah, no, it's a thing.
I think they're somewhat limited in that. At least when we were using Sentry drones with the sound fleets. The fact that you can't bring it with you means that you're not really able to align.
Well, the sound fleets weren't set up for Sentry drones, though. I mean, a lot of our fleets that we were using were a lot more mobile, a lot more, you know, reacting to the Provenant Sentry drones, because basically the only thing that we could do was get far enough out in the U.S. time zone when we had the reasonable ability to contest. So, you know, in a fleet which isn't designed for that kind of mobility, especially a fleet that's going to be coming in via Titan Bridge or something else like that, I think the Sentry drones are a lot less of a weakness.
Any predictions next year on what will beat the Sentry meta? What is going to be the next thing?
For the tournament?
Sure.
I don't know. I mean, we have like a year of balancing efforts to look forward to, don't we? So I think that's really hard speculation if they're going to be used the way they were. I was thinking about it because I don't really honestly know like what the major shift would have been that everybody started relying on. Is it a snowball effect where one person starts using them and they're super effective just for whatever reason, luck or, you know, bad enemy team comp, and then everybody starts snowballing with it because the meta is such a powerful force in the tournament? Or are they really just like that legit good? And I think it's kind of a mixture of both, to be honest. But, I mean, next tournament's going to be a whole completely different animal because we've never had this speed of, like, ship rebalancing in between tournaments. So, I mean, the tournament, I think, more so than in past years, in the future now, is going to be changing much more rapidly.
On the other hand, we've just gotten through all of the Tech 1 ships, the Tech 2 ships. We've already got hacks and command ships out. So I don't know that there's going to be as many ships to be rebalanced. I guess there's potentially the pirate faction ships. CCP is going to cover those. I'm talking out of my ass. This is not CSM, you know, predictions or whatever, so nobody take it that way.
That hasn't been a big secret. Fozzy said that those ships are going to get looked at.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't think that once they're through the ships that we have now, I don't think those balancing efforts are going to stop, because that's not like the way that Fozzy and Ryze are. Like, that everything's always going to be continued to be revised, and hopefully new things added is where their focus will go.
I hope they don't stop. I hope, like, with the Dominics, this is a slight change, but they're going to roll the Dominics bonus back from 10% tracking and range to 7.5% tracking and range. Those slight number tweaks are something I hope we see a lot of going forward. I mean, that's sort of the way that Riot does League of Legends balancing, and I find it's very effective. Like, even slight tweaks can shift the meta. Doesn't have to be a complete class-wide rebalance.
Yeah, it's super important, because there's never been a round of changes that we've talked about on this podcast where we were just like 100%, yeah, that's awesome. Everything needs tweaks, and when we had so much shit that needed major changes like that, you know, a series of tweaks are always going to be needed afterwards to fine-tune it. So I agree. I hope they don't stop. Don't stop. Get it.
All right, and we've kept the audience waiting long enough.
Are you finally going to explosion on them?
Yeah, it's time to splooge.
Mm.
The Providence contract. Oh my god, it was so good.
It's amazing. And for the first time since I've been on this podcast, I get to contribute content to the contract wrap-up. You guys have no idea how excited I am.
So if you haven't been following the news, here's the TLDR, and then we'll really get into the details on this, because there's a lot of details to be had, and it's fascinating stuff. There was a slight civil war in Providence, where Ali was a central player, and things got bad enough that she hired Noir. We came in there, and for about a week, so it was a few days of fighting, and then we got there for a week. It wasn't the most damaging contract, it wasn't the longest contract, but it was definitely one of the most interesting contracts we've ever had.
Yeah, I mean, I pretty much, I don't know if you remember when I was hitting you up, it must have been 2 or 3 months ago, with sort of just exploratory questions about Noir and how you guys work and how getting a quote works and all of that. That's when this... That was the first time we realized, that was when we realized this was going to happen.
Well, you played it close to the vest, because I didn't realize it was going to go down like it went down.
Yeah, the lead up to the Civil War was a slowly degrading diplomatic relationship. And when I realized that I might, at some point, be engaged in a soft defense, it occurred to me that I would want some more pilots for that soft defense, and recruiting a bunch of random people in, you know, obviously that we recruit over time, we build our alliance over time, but much more efficient is just handing a bunch of money to people and then they come in and you know they're already competent and all of that.
So let's talk about the actual powder keg. This war was famously started over a Navy omen. Which, when you consider the vast amount of ISK that was destroyed, including likely a supercarrier in build, it's just like, to the outside observer, like people in the CFC, people in test, people all over the game, looking at that like, are you serious? Walk our audience through what happened, when, who said what, and why things got so out of hand.
So where do you want me to start? Because I can start with the Navy Omen kill.
Start with the omen heard round the world.
Alright, so we, Providence flies NRDS, not red, don't shoot. This is kind of our one, you know, well, I'm going to keep saying R all the time, but we just got kicked out, so... Anyways, this has been our one thing that we do. And so my alliance was flying with, was running a fleet with a neutral pilot in a Loki. That Loki was our heavy tackle, and he was instrumental to what we were doing, which was beating up on some hostile Mercurials who were trying to camp a gate. So we've been bouncing around the gate grid trying to get tackle on the Mercurials and get them killed, when suddenly some people warp up and start shooting at our Loki. One of these people is flying a Navy Omen. The usual goddammit, stop shooting, friendly fire, and local goes out.
People that were shooting, it was Volition Colt.
Volition Colt, and it was a Volition Colt and Severance fleet. The Severance guys just, you know, stopped, no big deal. The Volition Colt guy said something in local about basically, hey, why are you so mad? And started basically acting like he owned the place, acting like it wasn't, you know, a big deal, that it was kind of expected part of life that, you know, you're neutral in Providence, you're going to get shot in the middle of defending Providence from hostile forces. This group had already had issues with this particular neutral. They'd already shot at him and said, quote, if you don't want to get shot at, get your standing set. That's not how it's supposed to work in Providence. So the Sound Fleet shot the Navy Omen. And the Navy Omen guy got mad. He got mad. He complained to his alliance. His alliance basically said, pay up or else. And our exceedingly diplomatic alliance executor told him to get fucked. They then went to CVA. CVA kept pushing on it, saying basically reimburse the Navy Omen. Originally it was reimburse the Navy Omen and apologized, then just turned into reimburse the Navy Omen or we will kick you out of your space. This is not the first time we've been told to do this or we will kick you out of your space. We were getting really, really, really tired of hearing do what we want or we'll kick you out of your space. So we decided to call their bluff. This was something that the leadership was aware of. It was something that we had the opportunity to stop and, you know, pay up or whatever. But pretty much everyone was, like I say, tired of getting told pay up or shut up.
Now, this is from CVA to what they consider their holder alliances, which if he talked to the Holder Alliances prior to this conflict, would go to great lengths to tell you how not pets they are.
Yeah, it's a point of pride for a lot of people, although not as many people as I thought, that the Holder Alliances are not CVA pets, we're CVA allies.
But you have to do everything they say and follow all of their standings and all this other stuff, or they'll kick you out. But you're not pets. Yeah,
but you're not pets.
Serfs.
what's lower than a pet?
Yeah.
Prison bitch.
Pretty much. So we called their bluff, and then it turned out that they weren't bluffing. We pissed them off a little bit more by sharing a forum leak that we had been given access to regarding some comments in poor taste made by some CVA people, and renaming our stations to provocative things.
Well, we'll call it what it is. There is a thread about this incident or incidents like it, and
it was
someone
a previous
in CVA.
Incident. It wasn't this one.
Someone in CVA said we need to make them bend the knee or kick them out or something like this. And it's this whole big, rather self-important discussion about how, you know, holders need to stop pretending like they're not pets.
Yep.
But we need to make sure that we do this in such a way that they don't actually think that they're not pets.
Yeah, that was said by a different guy than the one who said bend the knee. And the one who said bend the knee is, you know, like, oh my god, I can't believe they took trolling as serious, but that's kind of what their actions felt like.
Well, that's what it was.
Yeah,
call it what it is. That's what it was.
So we decided that the thing that was going around in our alliance chat before. Or when all this went down was that one scene from 300 that ends in "This is Sparta." We decided that they were, you know, if we were going to get kicked out, we were not going to get kicked out quietly, and we were not going to just transfer our space and leave without making the point about our ability to defend our space and effectively registering a protest via violent means.
It's the best way to register a protest.
Oh, it was great. It was so great. So
it's the first time that I'm aware of that a Holder Alliance has really stood up to CVA in that way.
I don't know if they're a Holder Alliance. I feel...
You were, weren't you?
Well, no, we were. We absolutely were. There was a group that stood up to CVA or did some sort of a insurrection thing about a year ago. Maybe a little bit more. And they've since fail cascaded, and that was kind of my fault.
When I say we, I mean some Verge guys, Verge Eclipse guys, and I. We had a wormhole come out in Providence.
I remember that was great.
Yeah, from our C5, we had a wormhole come out, and so you know, like, basic MO is, you know, when you have these nullsec wormholes, you just pop out, kind of run around PvP a little bit, and you can go home. And we just happened to plop right into the middle of this little campaign that Noir was having. And, like, I think two doors down from their staging system or something. But I ran into a bunch of old Noir guys. It was fun. And we basically just ran around, shit up local, and made fun of CVA guys. Because, you know, it was a little pretentious. I mean, we'd all kind of been following the story or whatever, and it was... The bend the knee thing, I was like, oh, they probably did not respond very well to that. I didn't know who would respond very well to that, but... So we went and killed a bunch of gentlemen's agreement because they were too busy making propaganda to notice that, like, hey, hi, it's us, we can PvP, and we just killed you.
You guys got a lot of kills in that particular incident. You also ran off a CVA gang, enabling us to save our medium tower, and then took care of a couple of Logi who were bad and busy saving that medium tower.
Yeah, that was the other part. So Sunderbolt, one of the directors, combos me because he saw me in local, and we were just chatting and kind of figured out what they were doing there, figured out that they were on contract and whatever. And kind of got the scoop about that tower. So yeah, that... that fleet wanted so badly to fight us, but whoever was FCing it must have been just so awful, because they spent the next, like, 30 minutes trying to figure out how to deal with micro-jump drive typhoons and leaving stragglers behind for us to kill. So, yeah, they didn't do too hot there coming out of the station, but it was fun. It was fun just to kind of, like, be vicariously involved with the whole scenario and not really have any attachment to it at the same time, but yeah. Kills, baby.
I mean, like,
it seems like that feeling was going around, because it was like the entire game wanted in on this particular fight. You
it
had
is amazing.
Goons, Test, Dirt Nap Squad, Brave Newbies Inc., a bunch of low-sec pirates, the Bombers Bar was there in force. Obviously, we got hired in. You had Nully, I think, showed up for a bit. Who am I missing? I think the only people that didn't show up were, like, Pandemic Legion.
Yeah.
Didn't see too much PL.
They showed up on the final day at one point.
All right, so the gang's all here. We even had, like, the Russians even showed up.
Yeah.
What was supposed to be, because, you know, of Sound Mine, the size, like, 200-man alliance. CVA's coalition, several thousand players. And it was supposed to be an easy campaign. They were just going to come in, push Sound out, no big deal. And that did not work out quite right, because you guys turned things around pretty quickly. You went from making them work for timers to actually defending timers to defending every timer and pushing SBUs out. And then by the end of the campaign, like on day 4 or 5, we actually went on the offensive. You know, we reinforced an R-64 and we reinforced a active super capital production POS and killed it later, which was quite awesome.
Yeah, it did not get defended because the people who were building it maintained that it was empty. And they maintained that it was empty to CVA as well.
But it was
CVA
off
didn't
when
call
we,
anything.
It was off when we scattered it, and it was on when we hit it. So they turned it on for a reason. Nobody offlines all the defenses on their tower to online production things and then not actually produce anything. So they're trying to save face, in my view.
I mean, the comments have been saying all supercap production facilities are always empty. Titans and supercarriers just come from storks.
Right.
But yeah, so how everyone got involved is we Soundmind took it pretty public. I wrote a highly biased editorial and published it. And got a lot of attention. I got a lot of people convoing me, basically saying, hey, this sounds like fun. I want to dunk on CVA. So that sort of loose coalition was formed. At the same time, I was in the process of working out how to hire Noir. Originally, we weren't going to bring anyone else in. When I first... I got the quote from Alex on Sunday. We didn't start open hostilities until Tuesday. The plan was going to be to have Noir deployed there right when the shooting started. But we were going to... I got overruled, and we had decided to do basically an honorable defense. We were going to, you know, fight with what we had, do our combat bombing, but not bring anyone else in. And that got scrapped when we were being spied on. Our comms were being streamed in the middle of our worst time zone. So their 300-person fleet did not have enough advantage over our bombers. They just started streaming our comms too. And it was at that point that we just said, you know what? Fuck these guys.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone gets to come in. Brought Noir in, brought everyone else in, started handing out timers, coordinating fleets, which was a huge hell of a time. A number of people stepped up on our part. And it was great. So how was that for you?
Well, when you first contacted us, we were about to withdraw from Delve, and I was like, wow, I totally want to be in on this fight, you know. And obviously, Allie being a co-host, I wanted to give her a hand. So I was, like, laying plans for us to go from Delve to our staging system, pack up all our stuff, and then go right from there down to Asaa to get in on the fighting, like, with no break. But as it turned out, there were a couple of days in between, so we took down a tower in Highsec and just sort of putzed around for a little bit. We didn't really even have enough time for a proper vacation because, you know, obviously we did have to get brought in. By the time we jumped down, we had missed some of the larger CVA fleets. But once we got there, it became apparent that CVA was fighting a losing battle, especially in the U.S. time zone. There was a lot of third-party fighting. There was, like, test fighting CVA and test fighting Sound Mind and people bombing test. It was very chaotic the first 2 days, but then things seemed to stabilize and gel a little bit. Noir's role was mostly bombing support. We did some Black Ops stuff in between the big fights, and then toward the end of the campaign, we stepped up in more of a direct support role, sometimes assisting with FCing, flying picket ships for your long-range fleets, things like that. We were running tackle on gates to pick up CVA stragglers and got quite a few kills off of that. All in all, it was absolutely great, and we had a really good time and got a lot of great feedback from all kinds of pilots of Sound, and Brave Newbies had some kind words to say, Dirtnap had some kind words to say. Primal and Reverb were the two, like you said, Dysico, I think they're called?
Yeah, Loseca.
Those guys were pretty cool. They helped us camp a gate we got a lot of kills off of, so... We made some really good, made some really good friends, had some good times, killed our first CSAA ever. And not only did we kill it, but we helped plan the assault for it, we helped reinforce it, and we got to assist on the killing blow. So it wasn't like we got pulled in at the last minute. This was like, I don't know, June provided sort of like the details, but like once she said it, I was like, oh, we have to do this. It became like my baby. Like, oh, I really want to kill the CA.
That was my baby too. That thing pissed me off so much. Because Super Capital Production in Providence is not a very safe endeavor. You always run, you are... one jump from Losec, you run the risk of just getting destroyed by whoever, you know, whoever you happen to piss off. People come through there all the time, etc., etc., etc. And the alliance who runs that CSA doesn't contribute to the region.
And to make matters worse, fleets? They're living in the systems that we used to own. The Nerve.
Oh.
Forever salty about that.
Yeah, I mean, we gave this to CVA. CVA gave them to some shit alliance. It's even worse than CVA.
And now you've killed their super capital.
Feels good. Feels good, bro.
Feels good. But yeah, I mean, if you remember me talking on the podcast a couple of weeks ago when you guys were, when we were doing the contract wrap up from Care Factor, and I was making some points about Northern Providence and Southern Providence, the political, I mean, it's a geographical division, but it's also really a political one. And that split was mostly maintained. Severance, the alliance, which is neutral to us, have sort of historically held that one area of North Providence, and they stayed out of it because they didn't want to come in, they didn't want to lose our friendship, and they liked what we'd done, but they also, you know, had their place in the coalition to think of. They caused kind of a headache for you guys, and I feel bad about that.
Yeah, so let's talk about Seven, now that it's off contract. They were supposedly staying neutral, but in practice, and I get they're your friends, but they really weren't neutral at all. They were shooting just about everybody that was helping you. They were constantly feeding intelligence to CVA. And particularly the intel feeding, like using your blue status to relay information to a hostile entity. I mean,
we weren't giving them any. We weren't giving them any information. They weren't getting anything from us.
No, they were just flying around reporting people. Mm-hmm. Like, whenever a fleet would move, CVA would move with them because Severance had eyes, and we couldn't kill the Severance guys because they were under sort of protection. Which made things really awkward and just basically gave CVA an alliance full of alt scouts that they could employ at will. And they were, like, forcing neutral fleets off bubbles so that CVA could get people through, things like that. Which, you know, would be acts of hostility to anyone that I know.
Yeah, that's not friendly at all.
On the other hand, they weren't preventing us from repping our structures.
They were doing everything but shoot your alliance in particular, but they were shooting everybody in your little mini coalition. They were feeding intelligence to CVA, and they were creating opportunities for CVA to make plays. And you and Xavier have made the assertion numerous times that, oh, if Severance was actually helping CVA, there's no way we could have defended it. But yeah, you could have. The largest fleets that Severance were throwing up, you know, even added to the CVA fleets, would not have been able to break what you and
the
neutral coalitions were bringing
commanders.
In.
They have experienced fleet commanders. We were getting the greenest of the green scraps of CVA. And what I would have worried about from Severance would have been more the fleet command and organizational skills than anything else.
Hmm. Maybe. Maybe. But it's your alliance, but I would be wary of them. I don't think any real friend would have behaved sort of the way that they were doing. And they were playing the neutral card, but like I said, they really weren't being neutral. They were being as non-neutral as you could be without actually opening fire. And like I said, they did open fire on us. I'm sure Brave Newbies caught a couple.
Yeah.
Pretty much anybody they could stop from helping you, they were trying. But it's all over now. So first we'll go through the Butcher's Bill for Noir, and then we'll talk about the end resolution of the entire thing. So the contract lasted 6 days. We netted 311 kills, 51 losses, 26.7 billion ISK damage done, 5.46 billion damage lost. Total efficiency 83%, and at least 2 billion of that is just Sensational's pod, because he, being a low-sec pirate, forgot to jump out of his high-grade slave clone doing bombing runs. And hilarity ensued.
Whoops.
Yep. And the rest of, well, not the rest, but a great deal others of that was a Nor Academy pilot named Linus, who just was having a hell of a month and just not learning from his mistakes. Unfortunately, we ultimately had to dismiss him over it, but he did put in a good effort. He was quite active. A lot of people were quite active. Sensational was great, pulled in 112 kills. Terminus Calamity, a Nor Academy pilot, pulled a 98. I was actually in the top 3 on a campaign for once in quite a while. 82 kills.
Congratulations.
And the usual suspects close behind me. And we'll see how much loot we have to sell. I have a feeling it's not going to be a terrible lot, because most of this damage was bombing runs and fleet fights where we didn't really have an opportunity to loot the field. But we can see. On the last day, after we killed just before we were about to kill the CSAA, you came to me and realized, like, CVA is about to surrender, basically. How did that come about, and what are the terms?
That came about via a Severance diplomat, and then another one, who basically drag CVA to the table, and dragged us. We weren't, like, completely gung-ho So they dragged, they got us and CVA at the table. This happened before the CSA went down. It was a little bit even before that. And we started hammering out what would actually lead to ending it. And so CVA started out with, you know, screw Sound Mind, their cost forever. Forget them, they're the worst. And ended up at, you know, we acknowledge that these particular areas of conflict are a challenge, and Sound Mind is not cost. Instead of CVA taking our space, we're giving it back to Severance, who we trust not to allocate it to TSOEC. Why give the space back at all? I wrote a post up about this. I don't know how well, Alex, I don't know how well your pilots were holding up on our end.
Well, we were chomping at the bit.
Okay.
This is super exciting.
We were tired. Soft structures have a lot of hit points. And we were doing most of the... we were doing most of the repping. Almost all the repping. And for the most part, all of that was happening in the late U.S. time zone after we'd driven off whatever CVA fleets there were for the night. So we could keep repping our structures for pretty much infinity time. You know, we could have gone on the offensive a little bit more, picked a couple of different ways to go on the offensive. We chose the ones we did because we thought they were going to create the most political havoc as well as the most consternation in terms of timers. But you know, there were other offensive options available. But our end options would be to either lose later and get completely burned out, lose our space because no one wanted to log on, no one wanted to rep anymore, to burn the whole of Providence, in which case we would have burned the whole of Providence and be left with a kind of useless space with, you know, CVA recouping in LOSEC and no one to put in it. And if NCDOT is in fact going to burn Providence, I think this is what will happen to them. But they don't even have any particular attachment to it. And then, you know, or we could stalemate them to the point where we would maybe keep our space and delay the actual eviction or what have you a little bit longer. But I don't think it would reasonably end up with us, you know, stably in our space. And I don't think that us being there would necessarily have continued to serve our alliance well. It's kind of one of those situations where we decided we were going to flip them the bird as we left, but having flipped them the bird, we then had to do something. And the something we went for was to extract in a way that was more under our terms, to extract in a way after, you know, clearly making our point. It would have been a little bit better, you know, if our iHub hadn't died that afternoon.
What are you guys using to rep? You guys have, like, decent triage comp?
Prosperous.
Oh, my God. No way.
We don't have triage. Yeah. We don't have triage.
No way. Oh, yeah, that's, like, totally unfortunately at that level. Something you need is that... Is that triage logistics assembly at the carrier level.
Here's the most painful irony. They actually had a system Sinojam, their HQ, but they had no friendly caps of their own to keep in that system to give them the cap advantage. So they had no blap dreads on standby, they didn't have triage archons ready to go, they didn't have triage Thanatos or triage Chimera to rep their posses or their stations. It was all done subcaps.
Yeah.
CVA, yeah, you probably made out pretty good in that situation then.
CVA was doing it subcaps as well. But yeah, that's why we're retired.
That doesn't make it right.
We don't have the capital capability. The most caps which got deployed, we did, our dread pilots did get to undock and do some things. We did some ops with Dirtnap Squad dreads, and we on a couple of occasions accelerated the SBU burn down process. We had enough people with access to the Cynojammer that we could cycle it at an advantageous time. But it was still a little bit hairy.
Option C, fund Nora, Capfleet, and we'll do it all for you.
Yeah, if you guys, we were joking about we could just form a mercenary group that just reps your structures.
There actually was a group like that at one time, believe it or not.
Did they get paid the big bucks?
I don't know if they got paid huge bucks, but they were definitely unique. It was called the Logistical Nightmare. Literally nothing but logistic ships, and all you did was hire them, and they would go and be logistics in your fleet in Empire or LoSec.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
I mean, I certainly appreciate that, and it, you know, because everyone, we had this huge coalition of people who showed up, but for the most part, they were there for the fights. And so when the fights stopped materializing. Yeah, there weren't a lot of caps.
Well, I mean, DNS did bring some caps, but, like, repping structures isn't really the fun part. I think Noir
exactly.
was the only group that would actually hang around and help you with that, and that's because you were paying us.
Yep. And we appreciate that. I do think, you know, at the beginning of the contract, I was looking for a couple of extra bombers, and I'd pay Noir for that. And it didn't end up... I feel like towards the end of the contract, when we started bringing you in conventionals and working more closely together, especially, you know, with the blobs in between ops so that our pilots could relax and drop on some guys and we could all hang out together. I feel like that was... sort of the bonding moment or whatever that made the end of the contract so good. Because when I started out, I didn't know what I was doing. Just like, wait, more guys. We need more guys.
There were a lot of feels at the end of the contract.
There still are a lot of feels. Tearing up over here.
Sound is a really promising alliance. Really young players and coming out of Providence, even being... in my opinion, the best of the U.S. time zone Providence alliances. It's still coming out of Providence. And, I was tearing into their fleet doctrines because they were running a Dominix fleet with blasters and tracking computers. Not a Navy Dominix fleet with blasters and tracking computers. Regular Dominix fleet with blasters and tracking computers. No drone control mods. No drone range mods, nothing of that nature. And I was like, almost fell over. Like, you're leaving so much of the ship's potential on the table. If you really want to run blaster dummies, there's an entire ship just for that. It has, like, it's trading the Dominix's range and tracking bonus for more blaster damage, and you're able to fit heavier guns and all this stuff. And once I walked that through, they were like, oh okay. And talking with their executor, Xavier, their Typhoon setup, which we'll talk about in the masterclass, every ship has a micro jump drive. And I was like, okay, every ship has a smart bomb. All right, that's interesting. You probably don't need so many smart bombs, but I guess that's a thing. And I asked him, like, why aren't you using your smart bombs? And he said, what do you mean? He's like, well, you know, you've got these CVA Dominixes and Armageddons and stuff. They're jumping on top of you and deploying drones. Why do you keep running away from them? Why don't you just burn on top of them and activate all your smart bombs and clear the drones in one shot? And he's like, well, we're sort of afraid of the Armageddons. I'm like, why? You're in Typhoons. They use missiles. You have no active hardeners. Once you get on top of them, you don't need to go anywhere, so you don't need the micro warp drive. You don't actually have any active modules that use cap, except for the micro warp drive and the smart bomb. He's like, oh yeah, that is a good idea. Like, You know, there's so much PvP experience to be gained. Like, there's so much for your FCs to do to mature, for your doctrines to get refined, for your pilots to get more confident. Like, I think being out of Providence, you know, assuming you guys make some smart choices, which you probably will, I think you guys are going to have a bright future ahead of you. You know, Providence can only take you so far with CVA's kitchen sink fleets.
And that's honestly a lot of why we moved, is because I think we've, you know, if nothing else, this has kind of shown off how we've outgrown the region and how we can grow with more regular PvP content.
Just say no to drugs.
I hear drugs are really good for you, actually, when you're PvPing.
So now that you guys are gone, what do you hope to see in Providence? What do you expect CVA to do? What do you expect the pets to do?
Well, right now, they're running pretty scared because NCDOT decided to take over where we left off and start terrorizing the area.
And they have capitals.
And they have capitals, and they're using them.
Lots of them.
Oh, it's a whole different ballgame. That's cool, though. I'm actually really glad that you guys left and hear that NCDOT filled that void. Because, yeah, they don't really have tests going on anymore, so what are they up to?
Well, creating content for Providence is what they're up to right now. But yeah, so we're moving on. We've kind of evac'd, we're restaging. We're going to go to Curse and do the whole NPC nullsec thing for a while. That's been a region where I've historically found a reasonable amount of activity there. There's a little bit, you know, harder PvP and more varied PvP, a little bit better access to other places where stuff is going down than Providence. So I'm hopeful for that move.
Hey, you might have actually an inside track on this coming from Providence. What the fuck takes them so long to form up a fleet? Like, when they first see an enemy fleet jumping in, I assume shit goes off in intel channels. But like, what the fuck takes them so long to get a fleet together?
It's because Providence is, for all the, you know, drum banging from the FCs, it's really hard to get everyone to get all their stuff in a staging system. Everyone has to get from where they are to the staging system. Everyone has to be told that they cannot bring their Drake. Go back and get their other ship.
I'll buy that maybe some people aren't staged, but Providence has one of the most impressive jump bridge networks of any region in the game. Like, I find it hard to believe that dudes can't be where they need to be with that jump bridge network.
Dudes can be where they need to be. Dudes just don't. It's not a priority for any of the line members. And FCs are bad at being like, all right, either rolling out or standing down in 20 minutes. You know, 20 minutes is a long form up, but the fact that, you know, that's quote unquote accelerated from a CVA perspective is, I mean, it's enough to tell you kind of how that's situating right now.
The first mistake was like, you know, it was like having stand down as an option. I guess, you know, like a form up, or we don't have enough dudes in 20 minutes. Oh, we'll stand down. Well, that's not really.
That's not like, how it's supposed to go.
Not really motivating. Like, nobody's going to be sitting and chomping at the bit, jabber pinging in ship for 20 minutes. Because, oh, it's already now okay that we don't go out. So, like, that's a cultural issue.
Yeah.
Or a mindset issue.
Well, people, you know, if people could form up and they could move out of fleet reliably real fast, then people would form up more fast. As it is, everyone's always happy to wait just, you know, one more minute for stragglers. And response gangs, you have to pull people away from whatever they're already doing. When, you know, one of the great strengths of where we were was we had a standing fleet that we always had up. Severance had a standing fleet that they always had up. We were one jump bridge apart. And so if anything came into North Pravi, the only thing that was left to do was to determine who was the bait and who was the hammer. And with that sorted out, our already mostly formed up gangs could ping, get a couple more people, and then dumpster some hostiles.
Yeah, I mean, you really have to wait for those stragglers. They do bring a lot to fleet, like their 1 billion-esque fleet typhoons that are local tanked. Faction-fit local tanks to fleet fights with a token micro-jump drive strapped on.
Faction-fit local dual-tanked.
Oh, yes, typhoon. Of course, can't forget.
Fleet typhoon.
When that thing jumped 25 kilometers off my Vindicator, I was pleased as punch. What can I say?
It was the Soundmine kill mill is definitely a veritable gold mine for creative fitting choices. And I imagine Noir's is similarly.
Oh, that one will be remembered for some time to come. Which I think could be said about this contract in general. It was an absolute blast, and thank you very much for hiring us, Allie. It was a shame to miss out on it.
Yeah, thanks for coming out. I think it ended up working really well. A couple of the Soundmind guys were skeptical at the beginning, and by the end of it, they're just like, oh, can we keep Noir? No, they cost money.
Noir Academy is now recruiting. We are looking for smart players who are looking to learn small gang PvP in an immersive training environment, in a program designed for new pilots as well as grizzled 00 vets. Learn the ins and outs of merc life, including efficiency and ethics, hostile nullsec survival skills, FCing, and more. As one of Eve's oldest and most respected mercenary outfits, Noir runs a tight ship, but we always strive to have fun doing it. If you want to be part of a high-end merc PvP organization that always strives to be better tomorrow than it is today, Noir is the place for you, and Noir Academy is the place to start. Apply today through our forums at noirmercs.com.
This week in Mercs, we've only got one story to talk about. It's going to be a shorty. The Final Stand has gone off the market for a little while. Final Stand, most famous in my heart for being the first mercenary corporation I ever joined. My experience with them in Divine Retribution Alliance inspired me to do what I did with Noir, and basically the whole reason why I'm here. So they're going to take a little bit of a break, probably check out those Sacker 00 and get themselves centered. I expect they'll be back on the market sometime soon, but they just need a break from... apparently there's a lot of drama in the Empire mercenary community. Well, we talked about it a little bit on the last podcast. They're done. They need to walk away. I don't blame them. If you think your Merc Corp is doing something interesting, send your story in to Alexei of Card. We will talk about it on the show. CSM segment. Allie, take it away.
Alright, part one of the CSM segment is going to be me complaining about how hard it is to be on the CSM when you're also fighting a space war. It's hard. If you wonder why some CSMs aren't around as much, I'm starting to understand that a little bit. I would question in future, you know, when people are running for CSM9, the thing that I'd encourage people to consider, both for themselves if they're considering standing or for other candidates, is what is this person's role in their alliance, and can they both fulfill that role and spend a lot of time on the CSM? Because for sure, doing something like the Provi War took some time out of my, you know, regular Skyping and keeping up with changes. So that's kind of the disclaimer and also warning. For future CSMs. With that said, stuff that's happened, the CSM 8 Town Hall has been scheduled. This will be our pre-summit Town Hall. The summit is going to go on August 28th, 29th, and 30th. The Town Hall will be at 1900 Eve time on Sunday, August 17th. As in previous times, it'll be held on Eve Uni Mumble. There's an in-game channel as well, and it'll be broadcast and saved for downloading by Eve Radio.
It's a bit of an edge to walk, like back to what you were saying about, considering how active they are, a CSM rep or you know, potential rep is in their, you know, in-game community and stuff. And like, at what point do you not want the trade-off between, you know, maybe he doesn't really know what he's doing because he doesn't play a lot, but he's got a whole bunch of time for the CSM versus, you know, I'm fighting Space Wars 23/7 and, you know, I don't really have much time for the CSM. Like, there's a balance there, and it's hard to find because you see people go inactive from the CSM all the time, and a lot of the time the excuse you hear is, oh, well, dude's fighting a space war right now, so, you know, GG.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, certainly it's great to have CSMs that are active and doing something in the game, and certainly, you know, a CSM who never undocks is going to have a hard time giving feedback, but, you know, I think dudes like Malkanis sort of have it right. He's a smart guy, but he doesn't have a real sort of leadership thing in his alliance, as I understand it. So it's a lot easier to fight a space war, I guess, as a grunt and a CSM than it is to fight a space war as, you know, someone who's trying to do all of the diplomacy, some of the logistics, and some of the FCing.
I mean, I have never been in a, like, a Sov war while I was on the CSM, but, you know, we have been in some difficult contracts, and being the CEO of NAR and such a small alliance. I mean, Turtle, you've tried to cover for me once or twice on, like, contract negotiations and stuff like that, and you wanted to, like, blow your own brains out.
Yeah. Well, like, the dealing with the people sucks sometimes, but then, you know, if I could make up my own price, but I was always worried, like, oh, is this going to be enough? Like, what's the average? So it sucks because it really is acting like, it's like a game of telephone because you're constantly going back to, I'm constantly going back to you and back to this dude just to make sure that it's, like, the same as if you handled it personally. You know, the price doesn't get fucked up and dudes don't get shorted and et cetera.
Yeah, but, I mean, it's a lot, but, you know, my opinion was always, unless it's an absolute emergency, the CSM's got to come first because you're responsible for stuff that affects the entire game, not just your alliance. But, you know, obviously on CSM 6 and CSM 7, plenty of other CSMs, that hasn't really been a lot of people's priorities, and CSMs were constantly plagued with lots of inactive members that just weren't contributing as much as the really active ones. And I think CSM 8, by and large, has more actives than any of the CSMs before it, but it seems like you're still having a few guys that really just ran to have the notch on their belt and not really to do any of the work that came with it.
Yeah, I mean, CSM 8 has quite a lot of actives, and we've got quite a lot of activity. I don't think we're struggling from, you know, I've heard stories of past CSMs having trouble, you know, just keeping up with their workload because they don't have enough people to spread it around to. I think CSM 8 is dodging that. I also just, you know, wanted to, I guess this has been one area in which the Pravi War has sort of expanded my perspective on the game. And in particular, the sort of weird game thing I do.
What else is on the plate for the CSM?
Well, stuff that happened. Command ship changes went out. You can find those on the forums. It's a lot of the stuff that they were talking about back when they first mentioned command ships and links. The bonuses to links are getting moved around. Both fleet and field command ships are now basically the same thing. Field command ships, the ships like the Sleipnir, are getting a boost to resists to bring them in line with the fleet command ships. They're also getting the ability to run more links. The bonuses are getting changed around. The command ship changes is the one thing that I've followed up on less, although, you know, other CSMs have been contributing quite a lot. With the command ship changes is coming a change to the way gang links work. After Odyssey 1.1, you will no longer be able to activate a gang link inside of a force field. So that means that this is the end of, you know, camping your gate and parking your booster ship in a POS in the system. Your booster ship now has to be out in space somewhere. They don't have to be on grid with you, but they have to be in space somewhere.
So now it'll just be 1 meter outside the force field or sitting in a safe spot like they usually are anyway.
Yeah, I mean, if they're sitting in a safe spot, you can probe them down. Unprobable booster setups aren't as much of a thing anymore. Sitting 1 meter outside the force field, that's a thing, but they still have to be at keyboard.
Theoretically.
What do you mean, theoretically? I mean, just... you.
I mean, yes, they have to be a keyboard, but it can still be somebody's alt on a second screen that they never look at until they hear the little warning siren when they get to 90% shields or something like that.
Whatever you set it at.
Yeah.
Fair enough. It's, you know, it's a small change, but it is a change. That's the link changes. Mining links are not affected by this, because mining links and actual combat links are sort of two very different things that happen to share a lot of the same metaphors for how they work.
According to Fozzie's post publicly, they fully intend to do the same thing to mining links once they get through the balancing of the ships that provide those link bonuses. And make them a little, he said in his words, make them a little more viable to actually be on grid.
Yeah, pretty much that.
Which, you know, I'm not happy about it. It feels like combat players are getting a kick in the pants, but fair enough. As long as he holds up to it. The thing that I'm most concerned with as far as the changes go, I like the slot changes to the command ships. I like that they're going to be able to mix and match to a certain extent their bonuses. But the actual bonuses those links are then providing got majorly nerfed. In all cases but one. In particular, the skirmish warfare link got completely kneecapped. I mean, far worse than any of the others. And, you know, that link bonus is extremely important for small gang warfare. And I'm somewhat concerned about what that's going to do to the state of PvP in the game.
I mean, I think the issue is, and it's something that CCP is trying to address, is that links are in some ways mandatory. It's, I mean, with info, or with the... With some of them, there's no way to replicate them in implants. Stuff like expanding your point range, that's not something that you can adjust with an implant. It is something you can adjust by spending more money. You can get a faction point and do quite well for yourself. But for other things, the bonuses provided by gang links were and still will be, but especially were quite high. To the point where having gang links or not having gang links was kind of night and day, which makes the gang links a lot more mandatory. And I think that's something that CCP wants to lower the curve on.
Which is fine. I mean, I have no problem with being nerfed, but it's like being nerfed 10, 15, maybe even more percent more than any of the other links are being nerfed. And considering its important role in small ships being able to take on larger ships and kiting them, that's a pretty significant issue. I'm hoping that it gets walked back a little bit and it's brought more in line with the other links of its class. I don't think there's a reason it should be the redheaded stepchild of links when it's one of the most important ones to have.
I mean, I think that's precisely why it got nerfed, is just because that was so central, and you can replace some of that nerf, like I say, by getting a faction point. Obviously, that's going to bring your costs up, but...
No, you would use it with faction point. Faction point, faction webs, gang links enable you to actually have a viable solo boat against groups of 5, 10, 15 players that are playing poorly. You can take advantage of that. It's the sort of stuff that guys like Kill2 himself do on a regular basis. Which is why I was surprised to see it get kicked in the shin so hard.
People, there's that great Navy Omen video that's going around, though, which was a guy doing that without any gang links.
But his wasn't a web-based setup.
It's true.
For some ships, they absolutely need a web to be viable in that role. Tengu, Drake... probably the Caracal, though I haven't tried it. fact, I've been a victim of it, so yes, the Caracal.
Yeah, I've been a victim of the Caracal without a web. I found that, especially against newer, more optimistic players, you can get pretty far with just piloting, basically, in a way to troll tank yourself. So you get them continually thinking that they're just about to catch you.
Is the CSM at all concerned about the rate at which particular links have been hit, and is it still something that's being discussed?
Yeah, it's still... The CSM has been very concerned with the links thing in general. We gave some feedback on that, and that's something that's still being monitored.
Well, we can only hope and pray. Well, it's hard, you guys, aside from maybe Ripard Tag, you don't really have small gang warfare people on CSM right now.
Yeah, Ripard Tag, Corvin, that's also his bag. Is the smaller gang stuff. I do smaller gang PvP, I just don't use links because I'm from a tiny scrub alliance from Pravi.
Yeah, but like the real high-end stuff, I would liken it to, you know, what Rook Capel does. You know, they take a triage carrier and like 15 guys and go out and try to find the biggest, best fights they can. And you need to make every pilot give the axiom, like the max amount. They need to be in faction-fit ships. They need to have links. All that kind of stuff. Or you just can't pull that kind of stuff off. And it's some of the best content in the game. And a lot of the changes that CCP's been making balance-wise. I mean, there was a big bullet dodged on CSM-7 that I'm pretty sure was released. They were... Oh, yeah, it was. they were thinking of changing it so that ships couldn't refit in combat as part of the effort to reduce the people that were switching... What you call it? Or no, it was carriers. They didn't want carriers to be able to refit off of each other.
Oh, that would be awful.
It would be terrible. And they were really gung-ho about it until, you know, the CSM and the community finally talked them out of it. But, you know, the CSM has to be wary of such proposed changes because they really have a negative impact against some of the best, most fun stuff to look forward to in the game for a lot of players that can't get to the battles of Asakai and these massive blobs. Like, for people that's not their thing or that's not accessible to them, this is the stuff. This is the in-game content. This is the stuff you look forward to on the weekends. And taking away the tools to allow that to happen is going to be painful, a lot of players. Anyway,
one thing which is a benefit to that smaller gang style is the local tank modules have been buffed. Shield boosters and armor repairs, including the ancillary armor repairs, will be doing more rep right now. Those are the modules of choice if you're running in a solo or small gang environment where you can't necessarily bring Logi. Certainly solo you can't bring Logi. Smaller gang, it tends to vary. So it'll be interesting to see if that gets those modules a little bit more use.
I hope so. I mean, you can do some interesting stuff local tanking, but you really have to go all out, and even then it's a dice roll at best. Hopefully this brings a little more stability to that tactic.
Yeah, I've certainly had some fun with local tank setups, but this will make it a little bit more accessible and a little bit less of a obvious lose, especially on local tank bonus ships. The Deimos just got the AAR bonus on it, so that'll be exciting. Not just got, but got a little while back. And of course, the Galente ships with their much maligned active armor bonus might get more use out of that kind of a rep boost.
Alright, moving on to our final segment. This is the our rotating segment, which we're going to do a masterclass on this one. We're going to talk about some of the doctrines used in the Providence Civil War. We realize the Providence is running long, but, you know, it's worth going over who used what, what it's supposed to do and how it actually turned out working. On the CVA side, they had two primary doctrines, Dominix's and Armageddon's, with sentry drones and micro jump drives, and armor tanks, of course, and then they had shield rocks and Nagas in more of a sniping type role. Both of these doctrines are, for the most part, long-range oriented, although we saw CVA repeatedly try to use the Dominix's and Geddon's more aggressively, micro-jump driving toward enemy fleets, not with the greatest success. The main reason for the not the greatest success is the micro-jump drive only brings your battleship. It does not bring any of your logistic ships with you, so if you do not prepare and position the logistic ships ahead of time, your battleship will be unsupported. And since you can't fleet micro jump drive, it really depends on pilots pressing the button. You'll come in sort of staggered, as we saw in a couple of fights with CVA. And what'll happen is you'll micro jump, you'll land, you'll get primaried, you'll be killed. The next guy that micro jumps will be pointed as well and switched over when you're dead. And there's really nothing the rest of your fleet can do about it because you've left them in the dust. That was painful to watch.
It was awesome to watch. I'm biased.
The Rokes and Nagas, obviously railgun fit. I hear CVA was relatively successful with them initially, but they seemed to move away from them as the war went on. The only time we saw them brought out in the later half of the conflict, saw them, you know, try to snipe some repair ships with them. Not terribly successfully, as Noir laid an interceptor trap such that we were at a place where they were going to warp from, and they warped at the same range all the time. So we just warped to that range as soon as the scout mentioned that they had left the pass. We landed right on top of them with a bunch of interceptors, which railguns cannot track at close range, and carved the Naga fleet to pieces. I don't know why they switched away from it. Personally, I'm a big fan of Rocks. I think it's a great ship and a great fleet doctrine to use. But I guess they felt more confident with the Dominix setup.
They had more ability to evade bombing runs with the Dominix setup. The Rock setup was more vulnerable to bombing than the other ones.
No, they did eat a lot of bomb runs, so I could see how that'd be a concern. I see the most vulnerability in the Nagas there, because the Rocks themselves should be able to withstand bombs just as well as the Dominix. But the Naga, of course, would not. Not even close. In their Dominix Geddon fleet, they didn't really have too much second-line ships. It was pretty much battleships, and then whatever kind of kitchen sink support they were able to get. And then they backed that up with... I've never seen them with less than 10 logistic ships. Usually it was 12 to 15, if not a few more. That was pretty impressive to see, actually. Very strong logistic core. On the sound side, your primary doctrine seemed to be cruise typhoons backed up by railgun megathrons. Walk us through this one.
So... the idea behind the cruise foons and the rail megas was to have something that could engage at a much longer range to deal with the sentry drone doctrine. We knew that their sentry ships had micro jump drives, but as you pointed out earlier, they did not have micro jump drives on the Logi, and they were certainly not that great at using them. So the idea was to bring the cruise foons in, keep them at a much longer range, and then shoot at the Dominixes without having to worry about their sentry drone DPS as much. Between those two ships, the cruise foons were much more successful. We had the rail megas because we just didn't have as many pilots with the cruise missile skills flying the foons. The rail megas were definitely sort of the backup fit there. And they've sort of since been just left on the cutting room floor. The DPS just wasn't quite there. there was range, but the damage was not that high. The cruise foons, on the other hand, were a lot of fun. They achieved their goal reasonably well. They were able to stay at range, although, as we talked about earlier, you mentioned, you know, going in and smart bombing is a thing that could be done. And there was some great hilarity with the cruise foons when we had some people micro-jump driving right into them. There's a great video where you can see three volleys of cruise missiles hitting a stranded battleship all at once.
That's basically what we were doing with those micro-jump drive Typhoons, was just cruise Typhoons, and they I can confirm they warp to the same range every time they warp somewhere because they brought that railgun Roke Naga fleet out to try and counter us. And that's what I was saying, bad FCs, they just didn't really seem to have the cohesion to be able to move as a unit, which is what you need to do when you're fighting another fleet that's like countering you specifically as a kiting fleet.
Yeah, the times I've FC'd kiting fleets, it's always been we've won and lost based on how well we were coordinating and how well we were moving together.
Personally, I was pretty impressed with the cruise foon doctrine. I didn't really think it would do too well. The resists are terribly low. But you guys put out some decent damage and were able to control range enough that, you know, it didn't really matter.
Yeah, the controlling range was meant to be the larger part of the tank there.
And it worked out. I'd say that the biggest lost opportunity there was the high slots. You guys had tons of smart bombs and never really put them to use. You know, if you had done, like, neutralizers or something, you would have been a little more able to defend against capitals if CVA ever decided to bring a cap fleet in.
Right.
Which, for whatever reason, they never decided to.
I think they were scared. They were scared that we would be friends with PL or something, drop our jammer at the exact wrong time, and they'd get their caps dunked.
Dunked?
Is a risk, actually.
Yep, and even if PL didn't do it, I know DNS was throwing their dreads around, hoping that that CVA would decide to come out and play.
We also saw Test and Brave Newbies bring the Tawar Doctrine, which is a relatively simple, just a big, gigantic ball of micro-warp-driving Tawars. Their particular bonuses and speed make them difficult to pin down and actually kill, and they do respectable damage from range with relatively quick application. So you just have balls of these out at 80 kilometers or so, and they're super cheap, and you try to bring down ships that are more expensive than your entire ball of Talwars before the ball is gone. And sometimes it actually works.
The coordinated missile fire, if you coordinate the missiles together, you can get some pretty high alpha out of destroyers.
Similar thinking goes into the Caracal fleet of Goon Swarm, but of course they're using more electronic warfare and some logistic ships, worrying less about the Caracal's size, because it is, comparatively to the Talwar, extremely fat and expensive. And of course we were making great use of Black Ops bombers. A relatively simple fleet. You have the Black Ops ship, you have a few Hunter Killers out in your target area. The Hunter Killers are typically in Recons or Tech 3s, and they've got covert Sinos. If they get on top of somebody in some kind of belt or sight, they pop their Sino, and your fleet of stealth bombers uses the Black Ops jump bridge to come on through and take them out, usually with one Rapier and a Falcon for support, maybe a little bit more. It's mostly just bombers, and you usually kill a dude in one to two volleys, get the loot, warp off, the battleship comes into the system where you jumped, bridges the fleet back to the system where you're staging from, and then goes back and resets, and then the hunter killer moves on looking for more prey.
I was very surprised. So my first Black Ops dropping happened this past week with Noir. That was sort of our recreational activity in between timers. It was actually pretty good for morale. I was surprised with how fast something died. There were a couple of kills that I'm not even on because I didn't lock up in the time I couldn't find the guy and lock him before he was just completely dead.
Overview is a beautiful thing. But yeah, it's a common complaint of people not being able to get on the kill mail, but them's the breaks.
Yeah, just gotta put a SIBO on your bomber.
We like to have one dude that does that, just goes for pods.
Makes
but you
sense.
Really want to make sure that you have enough electronic warfare in your mid slots such that if someone does come in on your gank, you're able to damp them down and sort of control them a great deal. Because otherwise, I mean, your fleet has no logistics whatsoever, and your hunter killer can't actually move for 30 seconds.
You could
up to a minute.
You could always get an Atana.
Could always get an Atana, Turtle.
Yeah, you guys want to buy an Atana? I could probably hook you up with somebody.
I'm poor. I gave Alex all my money.
I just said I could hook you up with somebody. I just know a guy, or like a corp.
What are they going for? 250 billion or something like that.
I can't even honestly remember. Maybe Pre-Star knows again.
I want one of those someday. Someday. They are pretty boss. I don't even think they've been used in combat yet. They haven't been used in the Alliance tournament, I know that.
Someday, you say they haven't or have?
I don't think they have.
Yeah, they have.
There is a kill mill with an Atana.
Verge lost an Atana in one of their matches.
No shit. Ooh.
Apparently they're only going for about 80 bill.
That's not too bad.
Save up.
It's only like 80 more Delve contracts. No problem. Alright guys, we're closing it out. That is it for 56. Go to declarationsofwar.com, participate in the show poll, leave a comment, or put in a donation. This podcast is listener supported, and the donations, recurring donations, sponsorships, all that stuff helps pay for hosting, editing, and all the other cool stuff we're trying to bring you. You can reach Noir.dot via our public channel, Cafe Noir.dot, and apply to join us for Noir Academy on the forums, www.noirmerch.com. Fly safe, people.